Good morning. So we are continuing our series on 10-10 vision, and we're in the section where we're working our way through the Ten Commandments, which I hope you're all enjoying. I'm getting some really good feedback, and today we're looking at what do you turn your hand to, which is really comes from that. This is stopping working. So it comes from the command that we're looking at, which is do not steal. It turned my mind when I was thinking about this sermon to one of my favorite books that I've ever had in my life, Return of the Heroic Failures, which is a book that celebrates failure. And there's a section on here all about the incredible world of crime. And for instance, the least successful jewellery raid. With a thoughtfulness that is rare nowadays, Paul Lassie alerted the staff of a Bristol jewellery shop to his forthcoming raid by sounding his car horn loudly. While driving up on the pavement outside, with the entire staff watching, he reached out to smash the shop window with a hammer, but his hammer bounced harmlessly off the toughened glass. So he tried to reverse his car through it, but missed, crashed over a waste paper bin and was stuck fast when a passing evangelical missionary, Mr. Herbert Eaton, prevented a getaway by hurling his bicycle through the car windscreen. Least successful car theft. While parked in 1987 outside the garage of Mr. Colin Baggs, a suspected car thief, two policemen had allowed their windows to steam up. Having gained no evidence whatsoever to support their case, they were just on the point of going up when Mr. Baggs broke into their vehicle. The immortal Baggs was himself unable to explain this moment of brilliance, but admiring members of Froome Magistrates Bench described it as a classic own goal. So, there's lots of these sorts of crimes. There's one, the most ignored robber. While waiting for his girlfriend in West Croydon, Mr. David Morris devised a foolproof scheme to get rich quick without saying a word. All he would have to do was march into any local shop and hold up a fearsome sheet of paper bearing the message, "I have a gun in my pocket. I will shoot if you do not hand over the money." In February 1986, he put it to the test. When he went into the chemist's, the female assistant thought it was an obscene note and refused to read it. At the Asian shop next door, the owner gazed blankly at the words, shook his head, and said he couldn't read English. And at the Chinese takeaway, the manager announced that he didn't have his glasses. It was whilst he was supposedly searching for his glasses in the back room that he called the police, who put an end to what could have been an extremely promising career. There's so many crimes in here. There's crimes about two guys who stole a fish tank whilst it was still full on a sunny day in Stoke-on-Trent. And the police just followed the trail of water all the way to their home and arrested them shortly afterwards. There's people who went in to rob a bank, but helpfully put their name and address on the other side of the note that they handed across to the teller. And one person wrote their demand note to the teller on the back of a check from their account in that same bank. So it was quite easy to be traced. One put it on the back of a utility bill. So, you know, not the smartest people. And Clive Bunyan, we should give a special note to Clive Bunyan, who went to rob his local corner shop in his village. And so he wanted to disguise himself, so he put on a helmet, a bike helmet, to disguise himself. They wouldn't know who it was, but helpfully he'd written his name right across the front of his helmet in gold pen. So he was unmistakable. They knew Clive Bunyan from down the road, and the police had no problem catching up with him. Which reminds me of a crime that happened, I remember, when I was growing up in Manchester. There was a lot of crime in Manchester. And I remember one crime where some local ne'er-do-wells decided they were going to rob the local Tesco. And they ram-raided the local Tesco in their car, and they broke open the shutters so they could get all the cigarettes, and they got all the alcohol, and they got it in the back of their truck, and they got away. And they were on court. But what they decided to do was take pictures of themselves whilst they were doing this crime. Just, you know, to happy memories. We like to fondly look back on our greatest moments, don't we? And where it went wrong was they actually, it's beyond me how they got here, but they actually took the film in from the camera to be processed at the same supermarket. And the police caught up with them. So, these things happen. Crime is a thing. I remember when I was growing up, I was actually quite good. I was the youngest of three boys, and I was quite skilled at how to get a day off school if you needed one. My mum would kind of just buy it. And much to the annoyance of my older brothers. But there was this one particular day, and I was off school, not particularly unwell, and I was in my pyjamas, and I was chilling out. My mum was having coffee with her friends in the front lounge, not really to be disturbed. She loved having coffee with her friends, and they would talk for hours. And I was watching TV in the other room, and I went into the kitchen to get myself a drink, and I was getting some water from the tap, and I could see across to my neighbour's, across the fence to our neighbours, and I could see some men smashing the window, masked, hooded, and then climbing into their house. Now, I was young, but I wasn't naive. I knew what was going on. So I dropped down so they couldn't see me, and I crawled out the kitchen, and I went to my mum, and I knocked on the door, and I went in, and my mum was like, "Not now, Adam." I'm like, "No, mum, now. She's going, "No, not now, Adam, I'm talking." And then she carried on talking, "But mum, it's important." She's like, "I'll speak to you in a minute, Adam." And then carry on with her friends. And then eventually I managed to get her attention, and she grudgingly came out to see me. And I said, "Mum, there's some people and they're burglars next door." And she kind of laughed. But no, Adam, I'm sure that's not what's going on. I'm going, "No, really, Mum, that's really what's going on. Like, come and have a look." So we went into the kitchen, and I showed her, and these guys were going in and out the back window with bags and whatever. And she's like, no, I think they're just workmen." I went, "Mum, the burglars." "Women don't go through the window, Mum. The burglars." And she went, "Oh, no." So she goes outside. My mum was quite naive. She goes outside, and she goes to the back fence. Literally, she goes, "Cooey! Excuse me! Can I help you?" To which came some language which I know at 12 years old I was not supposed to hear. And they ran. I was furious. Like, how could she mess that up? She just needed to call the police. And she didn't call the police. She went and disturbed them. So I took matters into my own hands. And I ran out the front door. And I chased after them down the street. And I'd got to the end of the road when I realized that I was still in my pajamas and my socks, and even if I caught them, which wasn't looking promising, I realized I didn't actually have a plan for what was going to happen when I caught them. So I turned back and went back home, and when I got back home, my mum had a brilliant idea, and she called the police. So then the police came, and they kind of asked me what they all looked like, and they drove me around to see if I could see anyone that looked like them or whatever, and I couldn't, and I didn't. And it was one of those frustrating things. But when our neighbours came home, I remember talking to them, and they were so thankful, because it actually turns out that my mum's polite interruption had interrupted them quite early in their crime, so they hadn't taken loads of stuff. And so our neighbours were really grateful that we'd prevented what could have been a lot worse. But one of the things that really struck out to me was, it wasn't just about the stuff. They felt violated. They felt like there'd been this huge intrusion on their lives, like something had happened, been done, like to the core of them. Like, they didn't get over this invasion of their property and this theft of their property, this violation of their lives, actually, for quite a while. See, what happens to us when we're stolen from? See, there is loss. Obviously, there's loss. Something, someone's taken something that is ours and not theirs, and so we've lost it. But we've been wronged in some way. But there is this violation. It actually gets into the core of us. There's an invasion of our lives. It attacks our sense of security. You hear so many people talk about, like, in their house, if they've had a burglary in their house, whatever, they just go, I don't feel like I can live here anymore, because their sense of security is gone, or their sense of identity has gone. They feel diminished in some way. It's far more than just the loss of some goods that have been taken by somebody else. Something happens to the core of us. So why do we steal? I think we steal out of discontent. Like, something's not right in our lives that we're trying to fix. It can be desperation sometimes, but often it's just something lacking within us. There's obviously a selfishness to it. Our needs are more important than somebody else's needs. Greed. You know, yeah, there are some stories where people are stealing just to survive, but actually most of the time it's out of greed. It's out of a sense of entitlement. It's about, it doesn't matter how much I have, I need more. And it doesn't matter who it damages, my needs are more important. It comes out of a sense of lack, that 20% away from enough that we're always pursuing, how we can have more or get more or be, and the more we have, the further away we are from enough. It comes from a disconnection within us. See, we are created for community. We're created to be in relationship with each other. But there's a certain level of disconnection happens if we're stealing from one another. I've disconnected from you because I've entirely disregarded your needs in a situation, or your best interests, or any care for you. What I need is more important than you. And so we become disconnected from each other. It comes from a place of disconnection. And then there's power. It's power dynamics. And sometimes it's people trying to fight their way up, but actually so much theft, if we think about it on a global scale, comes from those who have the most. It comes from the billionaires and the uber wealthy who continue to steal from other people. It's a power dynamic. So where do we steal? You know, yeah, there's the obvious sort of, you have something and I take it. But how this speaks into how we approach our taxes and whether we pay into the society we are part of at the appropriate level. It speaks into our tithing and our giving and our serving. We are called to be part of a church community. We're called to be in this together, to partner for the kingdom of God, and are the areas where we withhold in that sense. How we work. If you're an employee, sometimes we might just dial it in a little bit. We might just not give our all. We might withhold. We might hold back our best work just to do kind of enough not to get in trouble. But also, if we employers, far more often, I think, how are we stealing from our employees? Are we fairly sharing the profits? Are we honoring our employees? Are we kind of demanding that they give a bit more than their contracted hours, and we kind of just expect that they'll go the extra mile and they'll do the extra and they'll do the extra and they'll do the extra without ever really rewarding them for that commitment? That's stealing. In our relationships, where do we hold back? Is there attention we should be giving as parents to our family that we hold back and we apply that attention elsewhere? What about in our relationships with our husbands or wives or boyfriends or girlfriends or partners or whatever? Are we giving everything or are we holding back? Or worse still, are we giving the attention that should be within that context elsewhere? It's theft. What about the environment? We live on this beautiful planet, abundant with resources, but they're not fairly distributed. Are we using more than our fair share? Are we using the world's resources for our convenience with no regard of the impact that has on other people in other parts of the world? What about how we shop? Where we shop? Who's paying the price for our cheap prices? Are we considering that? Where do we suspect we might be benefiting from somebody's slavery? And we just choose to not look into it too closely. What about pornography and lust? We are taking pleasure from somebody else that we have no right to take pleasure from. Stealing. In Ephesians, Paul talks about stealing, and he builds on this command of do not steal. He says this, he says, since you have heard about Jesus and have learned the truth that comes from him, throw off your old sinful nature and your former way of life, which is corrupted by lust and deception. Instead, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. Put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. So stop telling lies. Let us tell our neighbors the truth, for we are all parts of the same body. And don't sin by letting anger control you. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. And if you are a thief, quit stealing. Instead, use your hands for good, hard work, and then give generously to others in need. Don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. If you are a thief, quit stealing. Instead, use your hands for good hard work and then give generously to others in need. Paul's taking this command of do not steal and saying, just the absence of stealing isn't quite enough. If you're using your hands to steal or to destroy, if you're using your hands to violate, don't just stop doing that. Obviously, stop doing that. But actually, repurpose your hands for good. Repurpose your hands for work. Repurpose your hands so that they can create. Repurpose your hands so they are a blessing. And you can give generously to others in need. You see, God invites us to repurpose the things that we're using to destroy, the things that we're using to violate, the things that we're using to steal. God says, repurpose them. Repurpose them into life. So instead of destroying, repurpose to creating, from idleness to work, from taking to giving, from stealing to generosity, from acting out of not enough to living out of gratitude and abundance. Where can we repurpose our hands into life? See, we've seen this image before. We are created to be image bearers of God, conduits of his blessing and his power to the world all around us. Or in other words, we are created to be givers, not robbers. We're not created to be consumers, we're created to be givers. And when we steal, we reverse our created order. We are supposed to bless, not steal. And this isn't just true of our hands. This can be true of our words. This can be true of our actions. But also it seems to me we can have blind spots. There's a story in the Old Testament. And David, the king, sees this woman. When he's out on his balcony, he sees this woman across in another building and she's bathing. And he's consumed by lust for her. And so he commands that his servants go and get her and bring her to him. And then he sleeps with her, rapes her, really. And then, because she's married and her husband was off at war, he sends a note to the front line to say, make sure you put her husband right on the front line in the most dangerous position so he gets killed. See, this act of lust leads to violence, leads to theft, leads to abuse, leads to violation, and leads to murder. David, the king we celebrate, the one who was chosen by God. So the Lord sent Nathan to David. Nathan's a prophet. And when he came to him, he said, there were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb he had bought. He raised it, and it grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity. And then David said to David, you are the man. See, David had a blind spot. He was so deluded by his own power. He didn't see the impact of his actions on other people. He was numbed to where he was stealing and violating. And it took a messenger from God to illuminate him to his own blind spot. What do you turn your hand to? To good or to evil? To generosity or to stealing? As the band come up, got some questions for us to reflect on. I would love us just to take a moment and reflect on some of these questions as we work through them. And if one of these questions like resonates in you, stirs something in you, feel free to not move on to the other questions. Sit with that one. What is it that God's saying to you? Where is it that we need to repent? Where is it we need to turn our hands to something constructive where we find ourselves convicted that we're maybe using our hands or our lives or our words or our actions incorrectly? What are our blind spots? Where are we stealing from others? Where are we benefiting where others are paying the price without their control or their consent. Where are we withholding ourselves where we should be giving ourselves more freely? Where are we withholding our resources where we should be sharing them more? Where are we using others for our own ends or our own pleasure to feed our own ego or for our own profit? Where are we taking more than our fair share? At home, at work, in business, in society, in creation? Where are we a bit too comfortable, even though we know that we're taking more than is fair? Where are we using our words to steal by gossiping or cursing or criticizing people, instead of using our words to build people up, to encourage people, to bless people? Our words can be really powerful for good or bad. Who is suffering because of the life we live, the decisions we make, the way that we behave? And then this final question. How can we repurpose our hands or our voices, our choices, our bodies, our actions to align better with God's kingdom and God's character? I'd love for you to reflect on these questions, particularly this last question. First questions are all about, where do we recognize we're stealing? But the last question is, how are we going to turn our hands to something more life-giving, more in line with God's kingdom? It's one thing to stop the damage that we're doing, but it's another thing to reverse it by blessing. These questions have been shared with our life group leaders. You can reflect on them in your life groups. Through the week, I would love you to reflect on them at home, maybe. Sit around and talk about them with your partners and your families, with your children. We are committed to being followers of Jesus. We are committed to living out his kingdom, to being salt and light in a world that is desperate for salt and light. Jesus says that the world will know who he is by the love that is actioned by us. The world will know we are his disciples by the way that we love one another. The world will know that he is God and is who he says he is by the love that we have, by how we live in the world. Let's not be thieves. Let's be givers. Amen.